Welcome to Practical Christian Living.
They wanted a sign from heaven. They wanted him to skywrite. They wanted him to part the sky. They wanted him to suddenly, you know, give them some kind of a sign that would prove it. Now, right here, a good question for us is, first of all, how sincere are we in the questions we bring God? God's big enough to handle any question you bring him.
Just like the Israelites, we can forget just how much God has done for us and how many times he has picked us up and got us going again. If you're doubting that God is there for you right now, take that doubt to him and remember the many, many times he has kept his promise to his child. Here's Robert Furrow, pastor of Calvary Tucson, with Matthew 16, 1 through 12.
It is possible for you to have something right in front of you and not to be able to see it. Have you ever had that happen? You ever had it on your desk? You're looking for something and it's right in the middle of your desk. And the person that you're with says, "Is that it?" And you're like, "Oh yeah." Or how about when you're looking for a pair of glasses and they're on your forehead? I have a pen. I have a pencil and pen, but I keep by my desk. And I write a lot of things in pencil because as I'm kind of, you know, brainstorming about messages, I'll erase a lot and rewrite things. But I have one pen. It's an extra fine kind of felt tip that I really like. It's like my favorite pen. And I was looking for it the other day, and it was in my hand. To my defense, I thought it was my pencil. And I was looking for the pen, but there it was in my hand. And when that happened, and I spent so much time looking for it, only to discover it in my hand, I thought, I'm glad there's no one here to mock me. Because if you see somebody do that with glasses on their head or a pencil in their hand or something right in front of them that they can't find, that's definitely mock-worthy. You should mock them for that. But if you're younger and you've never done that, just give it time. And you'll come to the place where you will actually do it. Well, that's our text today. In the text that we're covering, there are some things that are right in front of people and they don't see them. It's not physical. It's not what's on a desk or what's on someone's forehead, but it's spiritually. It's out in the world. There's some things that are happening and they just can't see it. In the beginning of our text, it's the Pharisees and Sadducees that can't see what's right in front of them. At the end of the text, it's the disciples that can't see what's in front of them. So the title of our message today is Signs, Times, and Dull Minds. We want to make sure that we have sharp minds when God is trying to get our attention, when God is putting something right in front of us, that we don't stare at it kind of dull-eyed and go, I don't get it. I don't understand. I don't know what's going on. God is very good at communicating. He's done a great job in telling us what's happening in the world, where the world is going, and the truth of what you and I can follow. We just got to be able to get a hold of it. And sometimes it's right in front of us. So we pick it up in verse 1 of chapter 16, where it says, "Then Pharisees and Sadducees came and, testing him, asked that he would show them a sign." First of all, Pharisees and Sadducees. Although in our mind we lump them together, they could not be more different. The doctrines, the theology of the Pharisees is radically different than the doctrines and the theology of the Sadducees. If you and I were to see them, if we could go back in a time machine and look at a Pharisee and look at a Sadducee, I don't think we'd be able to tell the difference. I think if you were alive in their day, you could. You could see the subtleness of how they would look differently. Having Pharisees and Sadducees together and coming to Jesus would be like having a far left Democrat and a far right Republican coming together to pass a piece of legislation. Sometimes you can have moderate Democrats and moderate Republicans bringing the same legislature, but you rarely have far right and far left coming together. And if ever they do, it's probably a pretty good piece of legislation, isn't it? Because they've got to put so much aside to be able to come together. Now, here's the thing. You and I look at a far right Republican or a far left Democrat, we can't really tell the difference. Or can we? There might be a subtle way in which they dress that kind of gives it away a little bit. But somebody coming from 2,000 years in the future wouldn't be able to tell, would they? They would just look at them and go, politician, that's what that guy is. Whatever subtle differences you and I could tell would be lost. Well, the Pharisees and the Sadducees were not only religious leaders, and religious leaders traditionally are very powerful. All around the world today, religious leaders at a word can have someone killed. I'll put it this way. Instead of all around the world, there are places in the world today where with a word, a religious leader can have someone killed. And there are places in the world today that with a word, political leaders can have people killed. There is a very strong political power. There's a very strong religious power. Pharisees and Sadducees were both. These guys are not only religious, they are political. And make no mistake about it, these guys have some power. When these Pharisees and Sadducees approach Jesus and say, we want you to show us a sign, and they were testing him, this is very significant. It's also worth us pointing out that these Sadducees, that's the, you know, Pharisees and Sadducees together. I'm just going to say Sadducees from now on, just so you'll understand it. That it's important for us to understand that these guys were not sincere at all. When they show up and they say, we want you to show us a sign in heaven, they thought Jesus was not going to be able to give them a sign in heaven. Here's the thing. Jesus had already given them signs. Jesus was the sign. The Bible says, behold, Isaiah 7:14, behold, I give you a sign. A virgin shall conceive and bear a child, and he shall be called Emmanuel, which is God with us. He was the sign. He was with Pharisees when he told the man who was paralyzed, take up your bed and walk. They saw it, but they weren't asking for a sign on earth. They were asking for a sign in heaven. There was a man who was born blind, and Jesus touched him and healed his blindness and sent him to the Pharisees. The Pharisees saw him and they said, who was this man that healed you? And he said, well, I don't know. He was a guy. And they said, well, we don't know who he is. And the blind man said, isn't this an amazing thing? This man has given me my sight, and you guys don't know who he is. And they excommunicated him. They kicked the guy. They said, you can't come to the temple anymore. They kicked the guy out. Jesus went and found that man and encouraged him. In other words, Jesus had done a lot of signs, but it wasn't enough for them. They wanted a sign from heaven. They wanted him to skywrite. They wanted him to part the sky. They wanted him to suddenly, you know, give them some kind of a sign that would prove it. Now, right here, a good question for us is, first of all, how sincere are we in the questions we bring God? God's big enough to handle any question you bring him. If you're struggling, if you're saying, I don't really know if God's real, kind of doubting whether or not God really exists, and am I praying? Is God really hearing my prayers? And have I really surrendered my life to God? And sometimes we're afraid to go to God with those questions because we think that somehow when we say, God, I'm struggling with whether or not you exist, that God up in heaven is going to go, no, you didn't. Now you're in trouble. Now feel the wrath of God because you doubted me. When in reality, God's able to handle any doubt that you have. God knows the struggles that we have. God knows the doubts that we deal with, and there's no one better to take your doubts to than God. If you're feeling that way and you're struggling with that, there's no one better to drive down when you're driving down the road to say, God, I'm really struggling with this, because God has given us signs and God will speak to the honest heart. But if you're testing him, it doesn't mean anything. If you go, well, you know what, God, I'm going to figure out whether you're there or not, do a sign. Like the atheist who says, when he gives his presentation, if God's real, then let him strike me dead in the next 30 seconds. Then he waits. Very dramatically. At the end of 30 seconds, he says, see, God doesn't exist. I'm sorry, buddy. You didn't prove that God didn't exist. You just proved that God is merciful. That's all. And that God won't be told what to do by you. And God wasn't going to be told by the Pharisees what to do. The truth is that God's given us all kinds of signs. He's revealed to us that we can go and study. And if God has given us signs, God says in the book of Isaiah, I am God and there is no one like me. I am God and there is none other who tells the beginning from the end and the things that happen before they happen. In other words, God says, I'm going to give you some prophecies. I'm going to tell you about things before they happen to show you as a sign that I'm real so that you can do your homework. When I was 15 years old, I went to camp. I was saved at 14 years old. I went to camp at 15. One of my friends there, allegedly, I'll say that because I really don't even believe him to this day, told me, last night in my room, an angel visited me. He was 7 feet tall and he had wings that were really wide. And I don't remember even the whole story as to why the angel appeared to him. But the whole time that he was talking to me as 15 years old, here's what I was thinking in my mind. I want to see an angel. How come I don't get to see an angel? I want to see an angel. He got to see an angel. I want to see an angel. The reason I wanted to see an angel is because I was struggling with some doubts. I was wondering whether or not God really was true and whether or not my salvation was really real. I was wondering whether or not my prayers were really being heard. And God kind of spoke to my heart by the end of that camp. Basically what God said to me, again, not an audible voice, but said to me quietly in my heart was, Robert, in your whole lifetime, you're not going to see an angel. Because asking God for a sign is, I'm not going to say silly, but it's not doing your homework to check the signs that he's already given you. In other words, in Daniel chapter 12, Daniel said, seal these things up in this book until the time of the end. He tells us when the time of the end, when the things in Daniel would be coming true, when knowledge will increase. So we're told in the Bible that one of the signs of the last days is knowledge increasing. So we look around us today. Is knowledge increasing today? We think of just how things have changed in the last 20 years. Think about the way cell phones have changed since the early 90s. What year was it? 91 or 92, 93, when the first cell phone was released? It was a brick phone. You could use it for self-defense and making a phone call. Somebody attacked you on the street, you could whack them in the head with it. That wasn't that long ago. And think about how much our world has changed because of technology. I think Gabe said in the announcements last night, maybe he said it today, you know, how many of you guys got smartphones? You don't have to be smart anymore. Your phone is smart for you. And to some degree, it's true. I put all kinds of reminders and things on my phone relying upon it. Technology is changing. And so if you say, God, give me a sign, and God's giving you signs in the scripture that you ignore that are right in front of you, what are you saying? Another example is that God said in the book of Isaiah several things about the rebirth of the nation of Israel. Never in the history of the world has there been a nation, not a nation, been a nation again. God declared in Isaiah that Israel was going to be destroyed, that it was going to be desolate, that they were going to be spread all around the world. And then in the last days, God was going to make them into a nation again. He said that out of Zion would come a nation born in a day. They would come without any birth pains. And then God says, and who has heard of this, a child being born without birth pains? Then he says the birth pains will come after Israel is born. Literally in 1947, Israel was not a nation. In 1948, they were. Literally, they were voted on, ratified, and confirmed as a nation in one day. They came out of a movement called Zion. There was a Zionist movement. God said in Isaiah, out of Zion, a nation will be born in a day. It happened exactly as God said. There was no birth pains. When the United Nations voted Israel in as a nation, it was basically because of the Holocaust. It was because of what they had gone through as a people in the Holocaust that they said, it's time to give the Jewish people a homeland. And they voted on it in a day without any battle, without any war, without any struggle. They gave the Palestinians their own state as well at the same time. The Palestinians rejected their state, by the way. Israel accepted their state, and the next day, they declared war against Israel. Not talking about the Palestinians, I'm talking about the surrounding nations. Egypt, Syria, Jordan declared war on Israel the next day. So that the birth pains came after the birth of Israel, not before it. Not only was the nation that was a nation become a nation, that was a nation, and then it become a nation. Not only did it become a nation, but it became a nation exactly like God said it was going to become a nation. And then somebody goes, well, that doesn't impress me. That's not a good enough sign for me. Well, I'm sorry. You don't get to point to heaven and say, show me a sign from heaven. The sign that you've given me. Raising the paralyzed guy or healing the blind guy, bringing the nation of Israel back, technology increasing. There are other signs that we're living in the last days, by the way. One of the signs is people scoffing. The Bible says, in the last days, scoffers will arise who will say, where is the promise of his coming? And I've always thought of that being outside of the church. Hey, we're made fun of. Those Christians think that Jesus is coming back for them. They believe in the rapture of the church. Isn't that silly? The same people that mock us about that believe that some people are going to be taken away by aliens. They believe we were planted here by aliens and aliens are going to come and take them away. They'll mock us for believing that Jesus is coming back, but they believe in aliens, that aliens are going to come and are taking people away. Some of the same exact people. And I say, who sounds sillier? You might say, yeah, we do. But you know what I've discovered? That mockers are arising in the church. I read several blogs every week. I'm in the habit of reading several different blogs. They're Christian blogs just to kind of stay current. What's happening in the Christian world? It's really easy to get into your own world and kind of miss what God's doing in a bigger picture. So I'm just trying to stay current, not because I want to do anything they're doing. I just kind of want to find out what's going on. Well, a couple of the blogs that I've gotten in the habit of reading love to mock us, people like us, who, not us particularly, but people like us, who believe that Jesus is coming back. They will just go to town. They'll say, oh, all of the rapturists, all of those who believe Jesus come back, and they'll just go to town and mock us. Here's the crazy thing. The Bible says in the last days, mockers are going to arise mocking his coming. By them mocking the coming of Jesus on their blog, they're becoming the fulfillment of why we know it's the last days and that Jesus is about here. The very thing that they're doing and mocking, they're becoming the example or the sign that we're living in the last days. So next time that you read somebody or hear somebody that mocks the second coming of Jesus, just go, yep, just like the Bible said in the last days. Right before Jesus came, mockers would arise who would mock the promise of his coming. Now, I'm not saying that Jesus is coming back tomorrow. I'm not giving you a date. I'm not Harold Camping. And the Bible says no one knows the day or the hour, which in the original language means no one knows the day or the hour. None of us know. Jesus just said, when you see these things happening, look up, for your redemption draws nigh. So we see technology increasing. We see the nation of Israel as the center of the conflict in the world today. Jesus said, the end is going to come as it was in the days of Noah. When we think about the end of the world, we think apocalypse now. We think a lot of smoke, a lot of destruction, and helicopters flying through it all. And we go, Jesus isn't coming back today because it's not like apocalypse now. But Jesus said, as in the days of Noah, people were marrying and giving in marriage, and then the end came. In other words, the day that it happens is going to be like every other day. We're not going to wake up and go, whoa, look, helicopters and smoke. This must be the end of the world. People are going to get married on that day. People are going to have their weddings planned on that day. It's going to be like any other day when Jesus finally comes back for his church and sets off those final things that happen. And so could those signs be right in front of us? Could we be watching them on the news and going, I don't see them. Doesn't prove anything to me. We are just like the scribes and Pharisees. Now, Jesus responds to them and says in verse 2, they say, show us a sign from heaven. He answered and said to them, when it is evening, you say, it is fair weather. The sky is red. And in the morning, it will be foul weather today, for the sky is red and threatening. Hypocrites. Don't miss the stingingness of his calling them hypocrites. These are religious leaders, significant religious leaders in his day with religious power. These are significant political leaders in his day with political power. I think his disciples flinched. Remember earlier in Matthew, Jesus said something to the Pharisees and the disciples came and said, did you know they were offended at you when you said that? Because they know the power these guys have. Jesus looks at them and says, hypocrites. I think right in their mind, they were saying, I'm going to kill them. That's it. He says, hypocrites, you know how to discern the face of the sky, but you cannot discern the signs of the times. You and I probably got up this morning, if you haven't been watching the news in the last few days, you looked at the sky and thought, oh, we might get some rain today. You're pretty good at looking up and seeing clouds and being able to tell. Storm's coming in. Temperature drops in the middle of the day. Oh, the temperature dropped. There must be a storm coming. It must be a front coming through. Maybe we'll get some rain. You're able to discern that. But you can't discern the very most important things. Jesus said in the last days, it's going to be like birth pains upon a woman. They're going to start slow and then they're going to increase. My third grandson was born. My oldest boy's wife, my daughter-in-law, had a little boy by the name of Braxton. He's just an absolute cutie, by the way. But she was telling the story of, you know, that she first felt that contraction, and you ladies will relate to this. She first felt the very first contraction, and she thought, I have indigestion. I just need to, I don't know, maybe I need to take a bath and feel better. I just need, right? She's been uncomfortable forever, right? Because she's 9 months pregnant. And a couple hours later, the contraction has hit. And those contractions, ladies, can be violent, can't they? They are like violent things. And you think, I am going to do it without any medication. And about an hour into, you're like, please, please, please give me anything, anything to help me with this. Well, Jesus said the end of the world was going to be like that. There was going to be an increase in the raging of the seas, an increase in earthquakes. By the way, of certain magnitude of earthquakes, there have been an increase year by year by year. I read an article a while back where someone was saying earthquakes are not increasing. When you got into the details of it, it was overall earthquakes. There's little bitty tremors that we don't feel happening all the time. Overall earthquakes, they're saying, is the same. I don't know how they can measure that. I mean, I realize you have machines that can measure earthquakes you and I can't feel, but how do you go back in time to tell whether or not those have been increasing or not? But earthquakes over a certain magnitude have definitely been increasing year by year and increasing a lot year by year. The ragings of the sea, call it climate control today, right? Used to be called global warming. They don't call it that anymore. They call it climate difficulties and climate problems that are happening. The ragings of the sea are supposed to be because of that, but it's happening. So Jesus said, these things are going to happen more and more frequent, like the birth pains upon a woman. And when you see them happening, look up, because your redemption draws nigh. Is it glasses on your forehead? Is it a pen in your hand? Is it something right in the middle of your desk that you just can't find and just can't see? We're just going on with our lives and we're moving, and we are not seeing that the signs are all around us. We're able to discern the sky. Some of you guys can discern. You discerned a while back when to get your money out of the stock market. You discern when to put your money back in. Some of you guys can discern when gold goes up and gold goes down, when oil goes up and oil goes down. You can discern the world pretty well. You're in tune to the nuances of our world, but you're not in tune to the nuances of God. It would be far better to be in tune to the nuances that God says about where our world is going and what's happening, doing the research for the signs he's already given us instead of demanding a sign from him now. Now, it goes on to say in verse 4, a wicked and adulterous generation seeks after a sign. This tells us something about the person who says, you give me a sign, God, or I'm not going to believe. Instead of doing that, go and do your research about the signs God's already given. And if you research the signs, if you go back and go, you know what, I'm not impressed with the birth of the nation of Israel. I'm not impressed with technology growing today. I'm not impressed with the increase of pestilence and plagues and earthquakes. And I'm not impressed with those. If at the end of your study you go, those aren't signs to me, well, then so be it. You've got a choice. You don't have to be impressed with the signs that Jesus has given you. If you don't want to follow him, you don't have to. But it's a wicked generation that says, you give me a sign. If today you say, God, you either give me a sign or I'm not going to follow you, that's a wicked thing. To go, Lord, I'm going to go do my research. I'm going to go see whether or not these things are true. I want to see, where does the Bible say that? And how does it really fit? We live in a time when we can check anything out. When we can spend a few minutes on the internet doing some research, find where it says in the Bible, go back and read that, and we know our days and we know what's happening. You can actually see what's happening. A wicked generation seeks after a sign, and no sign will be given it except the sign of the prophet Jonah, which is the resurrection. As Jonah was in the belly of the fish 3 days and three nights, the Son of Man will be in the heart of the earth 3 days and three nights. In other words, God's the one who decides what signs to give you. But God's good at giving them. And God has given them so that we can know and believe.
Practical Christian Living is a ministry of Calvary Chapel Tucson and is edited from Pastor Robert Furrow's weekly teachings. To hear current and past teachings, go to calvarytucson.com. If you'd like a CD copy of today's program, write to us at Practical Christian Living, 5170 South Julian Drive, Tucson, Arizona, 85706. Please include $3 to cover postage and materials. Practical Christian Living is made possible through the generosity of donations. Thanks to your support, hearts and lives are being changed. If you would like to support this ministry, send your donation to Practical Christian Living, 5170 South Julian Drive, Tucson, Arizona, 85706. With every donation of $25 or more, we'll send you your choice of Pastor Robert's series through 1 Timothy, Pass the Torch, available on CD, or A Fading Crown, a study through 1 Samuel, available on USB flash drive. Our address, once again, is Practical Christian Living, 5170 South Julian Drive, Tucson, Arizona, 85706. We thank you for supporting this ministry. May you come to know the incredible grace and peace that can only come from Jesus.